This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 469, brought to you by Arby's and iFanboy listeners just like you.
Meats.
When I step up in the place, say yo, I step correct. Got you all in check. I got that head nod that make you break your neck. Got you all in check. And you know we come through to wreck the discotheque. Got you all in check. Throw your hands up in the air, don't ever disrespect.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 469. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Mr. Josh Flanagan.
Woo-ha!
And Connor Kilpatrick. Oh, he's at a game convention selling robots, showing off robot toys.
Robots.
He's having fun.
Yeah. Okay. That works. I guess that's a valid excuse.
Yeah.
These jobs, you know,
jobs are weird.
They're inconvenient at the least.
Yes. We are iFanboy and we like comics. And every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book that we read, called that the pick of the week. We talk about it on this here show, along with other books of the week. Various other topics of interest, goofy nonsense, things like that. Before we get to the show, quick reminder slash warning, this is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happened in this week's books, all the people who got their heads chopped off, missing any toes, slept around. We're going to be talking about all of that. So if you are worried about spoilers, pause the show, come back when the coast is clear. And this week, the other guy had to pick. Josh, what'd you like?
Josh, the other guy, Flanagan. That's me. Yeah. Woo-ha! I'm gonna bring that back, that Busta Rhymes joint. Okay, I got you all in check. That's just for anybody out there.
Take me back to the Box Music Network.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. So I read one DC book this week.
No.
And it was Batman Superman number 18. And I do hate to qualify, but I don't want to qualify. It wasn't a great week for comics.
It's
really.
A weird kind of week. It felt like a... I don't know, like a fifth week.
Yeah, like it was like, let's dump the... And I think like the last 2 weeks were, here are all the books that we have for 2015. And then this week was like, we already used up all the books.
Yeah.
That being said, I actually, there's a value to weeks like these because you get to focus sometimes on other things, which is nice. So made the pick of the week, Batman Superman number 18, written by Greg Pak, art by Ardian Syaf. There's a bunch of other names there on the cover. And then, of course, they didn't put the title near the beginning. So I will give those people due credit when I can find that page. But the reason that we're at the pick of the week now is several fold. Is that a...
Sure.
Is that a usable...
You have artistic license.
It's several fold. One, I really... You know, I'm enjoying these really sort of straightforward, I hate the phrase, old school sort of... superhero stories, you know, like
throwback.
Yeah, like this just there's nothing gimmicky about this. It's just, let us come up with a threat for these characters, and as it is both of them, we will have both of them have to interact with this story, and we will get a competent artist, and we will just tell good old-fashioned DC comic superhero stories. And this is totally like an aging thing, or we do this too much, but like I really appreciate that. Like I would just, okay, I know what we're doing here. And there's something really impressive about that age-old style of comic booking. And I think the two guys right now at DC who are really doing that, you know, are Greg Pak and Jeff Parker. You know, and there are others too, but like they're just telling good old imaginative DC superhero stories. And I really like that. And then as an aside to that, when you look at what this book started as, and really it might just be a change of artist, with Jay Lee to where we are now, I gotta say I like this a lot better.
Yeah.
It's much more straightforward. I feel like the art fits the story a lot better. I know what's going on, and I like this story that's going on. I like that there's a mystery. We don't know what's happening. I like that Ray Palmer showed up. Basically, this the idea that this is, if you haven't been following along, this is the third part of the Superman's Joker storyline. So somebody out there is trying to screw with Superman, and like in the same way that a Joker screws with Batman.
Everybody deserves a Joker. Yeah.
And so it's a mystery, and we don't know. You know, here we learned a little bit about the mystery, is that the invisible bullets that were coming after people were actually Kandorans, little tiny Kandorans, who are microscopic. Apparently, this one's really big, though, the one that they found, a microscopic Kryptonian.
He's like a, I don't know, like a new era G.I. Joe, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, not the old, like, Ken doll-sized G.I. Joes. But
like, if I found little Kryptonians 80s. Crawling around on me, I'd be creeped the fuck out, because they're big enough for that.
And so, in the New 52 right now, the Kandorans are all in a coma.
Yeah.
They're all taking a snooze. They're all in Odin sleep. And so we don't know if he wanted to be shot out of a cannon, or that's part of the mystery here.
He did midair maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing.
So or is he being coerced in some way? Yeah.
So there's a really nice, and then there's a reveal on the last page. I have no idea what it is. It doesn't really matter. I know they're going to tell me next time. I don't know who those people are. I don't know what that means. This is a thing that I've had with comic books for a long time.
What is the last page? Because mine wouldn't load. I was reading on Comixology, and literally it's the only page that would not load for me.
It's a woman in a black bodysuit with what looks like a sort of gold, sort of almost a bat symbol. She has purple hair and red eyes. And then there's a bunch of like ninjas, like tech ninja kind of dudes behind her in black and gold. And maybe if I was reading something else, I would know who they were. This is one of my big problems with modern comic books, is the last page reveal. I never know what it is anymore.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's the Joker, I'm like, I don't know.
I mean, that's not ringing any bells for me either. So,
well, also, and they changed everything. So
right.
Everybody got redesigned. So maybe, I don't know. I think it's Polaris. No, she has green hair. And also she's a Marvel character.
That's true.
I don't even know if she's alive in Marvel anymore. There's a lot of stuff to keep track of, is what I'm getting at. And the other thing I really dug about this was, I don't really mean, you know, they have a book called Batman Superman because, goddammit, the dynamic between Cal and Bruce is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it just is. And the deal here was Bruce was trying to solve this for Superman, and his plan was to, this makes a leap with this relationship, was that the person that Superman cared about the most was Lois. Which, in this world, that's actually saying a lot. Which brought up the question, I'm going to ask you this, if you know.
Okay.
Are we done with Superman, Wonder Woman? Are they not a thing anymore? Did they change their Facebook status?
I don't know. But I think, like, all the time, even if he is going out with someone else, Lois is still pretty important to him.
Yeah, I know. But
so, I don't know.
I feel like they're hinting pretty heavily that there's a thing going on, because, Supergirl was like, really? You know, like, that was like, it was treated that way, which is fine. So Batman sets her up to be, you know, the bait, and she's so, you know, badass and trusting of you know, Superman's protection, not unlike Margot Kidder, like, jumping off the falls. You know, she's like,
yes,
you're to save me, I'll be fine.
Yeah,
like, she's got that, which I really like, because, like, she's at the same time, she totally is the damsel in distress, but there's also, like, such a chutzpah with it that it's not weakening to her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's just super confident, like, no, you're gonna take care of me, it's gonna be fine. But that really has to do with her, not him. I don't know. Mm-hmm. if that so anyway, it turns out that the one that he loves the most is not Lois Lane, but it's Batman.
Yeah, it's sort of a, I don't know, great. like a Chasing Amy kind of reveal.
Oh, it was great. It was awesome. I mean, it was like, because the heart of the book is really about how important these two characters are to each other, you know, both in a global marketing and licensing standpoint and in a fictional relationship standpoint. But I really liked that. And I
like that even when they're getting along, because sometimes they aren't, but even when they are getting along, Batman is always a triple agent in any kind of interaction yes. with Superman. He's like, oh, just in case I do have kryptonite laced armor. And just in case I lied to you about three things in this scenario, but it would be because okay. Like, imagine being Superman and your best friend is Batman.
At the same time, but you know, Batman realizes that if his best friend is Superman, his best friend is like a bajillion megatotten weapon.
But then imagine if you're Superman again and just okay. like that your friend thinks that or like has to be aware of that and well, how
maybe
awkward
you're, maybe
that
you're
is.
Not as close to Ron as I am, but I have so hard to imagine. That's a long time listener joke.
But I guess Superman would appreciate that like he knows of anyone knows that he's volatile. You know, that he could be dangerous, you know, if he falls into the wrong hands. And so it makes sense for Batman to be his best friend because he's the one that isn't pussyfooting around. He's the one who knows that Superman is a warhead.
I feel like Superman appointed him as that. I mean, Batman appointed himself also, but I feel like Superman has taken that on board. And so he's like, yep, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, if I go nuts, and you know, it wasn't long ago that he was infected with the Doom, you know, with the Doomed storyline and was going nuts, and that's what Batman's there for.
Yeah, but in the back of your mind still, you know, Batman calls you up and he's like, let's go to Arby's, and you're Superman, you're like, we're not going to Arby's. Like, that's
well,
what
this episode was brought to you by Arby's.
That's exactly why I
it's
mentioned
delicious.
It. So, it's why he, also. You know, you want to get that horsey sauce, but he knows that he's not going to end up at Arby's by the end of the night. He's going to be somewhere else. It's going to be like some kind of birthday celebration or whatever that Batman set up, and he's not going to take credit for it, whatever.
Do you think they like lukewarm meat on a wet bun? Do you think they're into that, like a wet meat sandwich?
They like the jalapeno poppers.
Really? That's a thing?
Yeah.
One time they undercooked my chicken fingers, like way back in college, and then I went back and I was like, this chicken's raw, and they were literally like, what do you want me to do about it? It's like, well, I'm done with this entire corporation based on one shithead in 1998, apparently, by the way. Anyways, but this episode is brought to you by Arby's.
So they did it on high heat. You put them in.
That's not supposed to be possible with the corporate fryolators, I don't think, though. Like, right. It's kind of on. And that heats them up to...
I think if you take them right from the freezer and pop them in and they're on too high of heat,
yeah,
you're going to cook the outside, but mm-hmm. the inside's going to stay pink.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think the listeners at home right now are going, this is what I wanted. This is it. Finally, we got there.
Well, that's what they're getting.
They have no choice.
They have no choice.
So
they're stuck.
I know that I sort of hit the issue with a qualifier at the beginning, but at the same time, I really liked it. I really liked this storyline. I almost dropped the book during the sort of last arc. And it's just like good old-fashioned comic books. And actually, when I looked at everything I read this week, it wasn't much of a choice for me. It was like, this was the book.
There's nothing wrong with like meat and potatoes superhero stories.
Exactly.
It's fun.
Exactly. And well done, too. I mean, that's the other key.
Unlike your chicken fingers.
Unlike exactly. Exactly.
Let's talk about Rumble number two. So John Arcudi stepping out from the Mignola-verse.
Not just him.
James Harren as well.
And Dave Stewart. Bringing
and Dave Stewart. Yeah, that's true.
With Chris Eliopoulos on letters. This right here, this is pretty all-star team.
This is pretty great. This is, you know what's tricky about this? I have no idea how to pitch this.
I didn't read about what it was beforehand. I started reading it. I got through two issues and I was like, I have no idea what that was, but I really like it.
Well, I feel confident in that I'm sort of like passively allowing myself to be taken on this journey mm-hmm. of with John Arcudi and James Harren and Dave Stewart like manning the rickshaw. And taking me through this wonderful world of supernatural creatures. Basically, I guess the way to pitch it is that it's what seems to be this ongoing, maybe eons old battle between good and evil and various supernatural entities mm-hmm. and maybe a golem of some sort or maybe a couple of golems. Like the thing that washes up with the alligators that seems to be a MacGuffin, that thing seems to be some kind of, I don't know, homunculus or golem or whatever. And then this main character, not the main character, but this through character with the cape and the sword is some kind of scarecrow thing that is a protector of mankind, we found out with issue two, but is also bent on destroying some dudes. And there's this one bartender who is caught up in the midst of it. and they found out through his goofy stoner friend's linguistic expert friend that this IOU he got is an offshoot of Phoenician. So there's some weird through line there, but it's basically like monsters in a battle royale, basically.
Here's the thing. It's just really hard to explain. I don't know what's going on. It's two issues in. I honestly don't know.
Like, I understand from beat to beat, but it's like they're withholding some information from us.
Well, I mean, and that's a storytelling choice. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, given the pedigree of these creators. And I feel like we don't talk about James Herron a lot, but he is one of those guys that whenever I see a piece of his on the internet or whenever I see that his name is on the cover of something I'm going to read, I get very excited. I think he's the bee's knees. I think he's right up there with the guys who need to fucking stop it.
Yeah.
And I mean that. And you've got
I was thinking that too. It's the Mateo Scalera thing. Let's just stop.
Yeah. I mean, it's not nice what he's doing. So other people have to do this for
a
living.
It's unreasonable.
So, you know, I give them a lot of rope basically, and they've chosen this is the thing that I think of every time is the Star Wars mod, the episode 4, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Can't explain anything. It just starts up. We know now because we know, but back then people had no idea. They didn't explain who Darth Vader was. It was a whole bunch of shit going on, and you started watching it from eye level, and that's what this is. You know, and given what we know about it, I'm cool with that.
It's a little, you know, it's like watching an episode of Murder, She Wrote with my mom. And I know she's going to be like, well, wait a minute. Do you think that guy can? I was like, well, let's find out. Let's continue watching. And I have full faith in the creators involved in Murder, She Wrote that they're going to give us the information we need. It's just they're rationing it out a bit. And so I think intentionally we're left in the dark just as Bobby the bartender is. And I think we have enough hints to at least know somewhat who's on the side of good and who's on the side of evil. Like, we know at this point that the scarecrow thing is, you know, is not going to hurt Bobby, wants to protect him. Creepy moment where he wakes up at the foot of his bed. I love the monster designs in this.
Well, I was going to say, like, right now, if like the only purpose of this book is to design a bunch of monsters and weird looking things between Herron and Stewart, I'm actually okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of am all right with that if it turns out to be a bigger thing. And listen, you know, Arcudi's a heck of a writer, so I think we're gonna get there. But yes, I mean, I'm agreeing with you. Whatever that big sword thing is, and he's made of straw. The rib cage demon. Herron and Otley at one point, I don't know if they're still doing it, but they had a blog where the two of them would just draw monsters. Like, that was what they did.
That's awesome. Because, I mean, it's like, and it's not like, okay, this is a Creature from the Black Lagoon monster and this is like a mummy kind of thing. They're breaking out from the Universal monsters and going in with completely, and they're not even like informed necessarily by like a certain animal. You know, it's a bunch of things cobbled together and to the point that it just becomes its own unique creature. Like, I love the one with like the sort of intestines on the outside.
Yep.
That seem to be glowing a little bit. There's also a cat that explodes. We didn't even talk about the three-legged dog and the cat that just blows up. There's a cat that fell out of a window.
Right.
And apparently, like, is undead. There's something weird with his eyes. And in this issue, he's grown out of the apartment, ate all the stuff in the refrigerator, is now out in an alley eating stuff out of a dumpster. And he just blows up, and it seems like light's coming out. It's just, if you love monsters and... I don't know. There's like a kind of a sandbox quality to this that I really like. It's just, let's have some monsters do some crazy stuff. Let's have this guy catch on fire for no reason.
And the one guy has a multi-headed lizard snake for his pet.
He takes him out to play fetch with the football.
Upset when it's beheaded.
Yep. I love I just love the playfulness of it.
None of these things have context yet. And, you know, that could ruin it. So why bother?
And, you know, going with this sort of the title, Rumble, it's great monster fights in every issue.
Yep.
So.
And there's lots, I mean, you know, there's things that this shares with Maceo Scalera. There's a lot of speed lines going on here.
Yeah.
A lot of speed lines.
Great monster design. Whenever that sword goes through something and you see the blood and viscera, it looks like yogurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun. This book turns me into like a 12-year-old, and I'd love it.
Yeah, it's worth the time. I think, what we're getting at.
Absolutely, yeah.
Meanwhile, another book that I did enjoy was All New X-Men number 35. You could call this Rumble almost. There's a lot going on, and it's been long enough that I was like, what the fuck am I looking at?
This arc is sort of like a precursor to Secret Wars and Battle World, because you've got a mashup of the Ultimate Universe and the 616 or whatever, and so you have multiple Jean Greys and
with when this book started, you know, like on paper, if you were to look at me and say, "Oh, do you want to do this?" I'd go, "No, it sounds like a bad idea," but it's pretty compelling.
Mm-hmm.
It has been, you know, watching the different Iceman, all the Iceman interacting with both himself and other people. That was all just wonderful.
Yeah, it's sort of like the inverse of Rumble, but still in a good way, like where we can't really pitch Rumble without just rambling about things we liked about it.
Yeah.
This is something where it's super pitchable, but it doesn't feel like, oh, it's just a paint-by-numbers kind of gimmicky thing. We take the X-Men from the past and bring them into the future, which sounds like an event thing for event's sake. And
the offshoot of that is we then take those X-Men from the past and then we have them meet the Ultimate X-Men at the same time. And then they go fight Dr. Doom. Like, it sounds stupid, but it's, you know, he's making it work. And then, Miles Morales will be there.
Miles Morales, yeah. Why? So it's... Mm. Sure. I mean, like, and that's sort of the thing, is that, like, the Ultimate Universe, there's not really, this is sort of like the last hurrah of the Ultimate Universe, it feels like.
Yeah.
I mean, these characters, because I don't think any of them are going to survive this whole Secret Wars thing. And Miles Morales, it's sort of like, I feel like in a way Secret Wars is just like a way to have Miles Morales survive, mm-hmm. and not go out with the bathwater of the Ultimate Universe. I mean, like, because there's like nothing else really going for the Ultimate Universe.
No, yeah.
It's super. I mean, there's some interesting things happen, you know, even within recent years. But by and large, if you're looking at that versus the 616, like very little of that is going to survive. And the one sort of draw is Miles, mm-hmm. and you want. Even if they're going to take away the Ultimate Universe, they have to come up with some way for Miles to still be around.
Yeah.
And this is sort of like a way to say, hey, wasn't, you know, Ultimate Gene kind of interesting? And
yeah,
let's celebrate Ultimate, you know, some of the Ultimate mutants that died that aren't around anymore, which is a bunch.
Yeah. No, it's, you're totally, you know, by putting Ultimate Gene with this Gene, like, it, you know, that stuff comes out of it that is interesting, or you know, let's also, again, a concept that really should have run its course is X-23, and you know, between what's going on in this book and what had happened in Avengers Arena, like that character's been really one of the really interesting characters for mm-hmm. a while in Marvel now, and again on paper that doesn't make sense. So you know, when you see, you know, Marvel's gonna merge the universes or whatever, and you're like, well, it's stupid, like, who knows, who cares what the press release says? Just, you know,
it's sort of like right there in front of you. It's so simple. Like, when you take the ultimate love triangle within Marvel universe, within comics in general, and Cyclops, Jean, Wolverine, mm-hmm. and let's flip a gender on one of those and let's make them teenagers.
Yeah.
And it just sort of writes itself.
Yeah. And you know, there's things that Bendis is good at, and I cannot begrudge him this. Mm-hmm. Is it Mahmoud Asrar?
It's Mahmoud Asrar coming in and a really great fit for this.
Yeah, he's fit in right away with, you know, David Marquez, and I don't think Michelle does it anymore so much, but there's been a strong continuity of Image, I guess, in these. It's a good book, you know.
Really good stuff.
Autumn Lands Tooth and Claw, number 3.
Number 3. So Tooth and Claw has been renamed Autumn Lands. Did we talk about the first one? I don't know if we talked about the second one at all.
Was that the Autumn Lands that's new? That wasn't on it before, was it?
And Busiek in the back is like, there used to be a Tooth and Claw. He's like, I did a Google search to see if there was something with that trademark, and there wasn't, because there was a comic called Tooth and Claw, and it was an Image book from years ago, and it had sort of lapsed. But apparently in 2012, the guy who wrote Tooth and Claw re-upped it and wants to do more stuff, so now they have to rename it. So he said eventually, like, the Tooth and Claw is going to fall away, but just, you know, mm-hmm. since this just started and people checked out Tooth and Claw number one. They want people to know that that's the same book. So it's going to be Autumn Lands ultimately.
Thank you for explaining that to me, because I didn't read it because I was lazy. So you provided me a service.
I just think it's interesting, and it's really ironic that it was another Image book with the same name. It wasn't something from, I don't know.
Listen, from what I understand, the guys running that company, they got no idea what is going on.
But as you know, big fan of the anthropomorphic animals, and when you throw in swords and sorcery stuff with it, even more exciting. One of my favorite movies is Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Now, I've mentioned two different Angela Lansbury vehicles on this one podcast, mm-hmm. and there will be more if I can fit them.
I would really love to see you go. I'd like you to take that to its logical conclusion.
Logical conclusion. We'll see. I've got some ideas. Anyways, in that movie, which has a ton of different sections, there's the one part that's animation, and they go to the island of Naboombu, and there's anthropomorphic animals, and the backstory of that is there was this sorcerer, and they overtook the human sorcerer, and it became an island of talking, walking animals. And in this world of Autumn Lands, you've got these animals who don't remember the past. I'm assuming this is the far future where there are no more humans left except for the one that they've summoned from the past, because magic is going away and they need a new champion. And there are crazy scarred bison people coming, and they're away from their floating city and now down on the ground. And I just like pretending that this human guy that they've summoned, the champion, is Tim Riggins. And that makes it even more fun.
Sorry,
but he's sort of this reluctant savior of these animal people and like owl wizards and warthogs.
But he ain't the same humans what we is. There's like his world is very close to ours, but he's using different words and stuff.
Yeah. I don't know if that's just like the future.
I don't know. Maybe.
Is like that they refer to sort of a coalition, and there's a little prose piece about a war, which I guess I'm assuming it's like a World War III scenario where like the humans just destroyed each other and magic was involved, and then like the animals rose up.
Yeah.
But it's been so there's been so much time between then that things have been forgotten and lost to history, and so they don't really know what to make of this guy, and he doesn't know what to make of them.
So I'm slightly ambivalent on this.
Yeah.
In that I'm almost bored of some of it. Like, there's a lot of characters and they're infighting and everything.
There are a lot of characters, yeah.
But it is interesting. It is compelling enough that I do want to keep reading it, and the art does really take me over the part. The sort of the dog guy, you know, like his face, the way they drew, like the art's fantastic. Like, it's a really good choice.
You mean the bull terrier guy?
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks like a bulldog to me.
I saw one of those the other day. Somebody in my neighborhood's got a bull terrier.
And sort of the being able to do the expressions on that is it a fox? The fox lady? Whatever.
It's a fox lady. She's like a trader or something, and you think she's allied with the animals from up in the sky, but actually she's also dealing with the bad buffalo people.
So a lot of times your problem is going to be that there's not enough to grab onto, and here they are skirting right at the edge of too much world building. Like, mm-hmm. There's a lot to pay. There's a lot going on. It's extremely dense.
Yeah.
But I'm not enjoying it. It's in danger of it at times, but really it's pulled me back around.
No, I completely understand. I was surprised that the Bull Terrier character, who lost his father in the first issue, I thought that he was kind of going to be our sort of protagonist, our through line. Mm-hmm. And now it's sort of switched, at least in this issue, to the human. And I wish that we had a little bit more of the dog. We just sort of see him in the background of this issue.
I think we'll come back to it, is my guess.
I'm assuming we'll come back to him. But
one thing that Kurt Busiek can do is find a thread and explore it. I mean, that's he does not have a problem with that.
Yeah, I'm just saying it would sort of be easier if we had the dog to be like, that's our entry point. That's our every dog.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, I don't know any of these characters' names. There's too many of them. I'm like, wait, no. So is the owl the asshole, or was the boar lady?
Now imagine if they were people.
Yeah, no, I get that.
You know what I mean? Like, it would be like way too confusing. So having them, I think it's okay to be like, okay, that's the owl guy, and I know that, or the owl doesn't get along with the warthog, and
right. Is one of them a lady? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. So this, I mean, it's just on the edge of too much.
I love the ambition of it. I like this. I do like the scope of it. And if they can maintain that, it's early days. So hopefully, you know,
dude's got the chop. I mean, like, Busick has the chops to handle it, though. Like, mm-hmm. I have no doubt about that. So
mm-hmm.
I'm in for now. I'm in for a while. I'm good.
Cool.
Scotty Young is turning into a relatively impressive writer, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's doing some good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Rocket Raccoon number 7. This is still going.
I just want to start off with the cover.
Yeah.
You've got sort of a whiteout pastiche to it.
I just wanted, there is a Alex Ross painting on the inside of the last page of the Autumnlands Tooth and Claw.
Oh God, yeah.
Oh my God, that's like the best thing he's done in forever.
It really is.
I didn't want to let that go. I'm sorry.
You're right. It's super gorgeous. I'm glad we mentioned it. So you get this whiteout sort of homage, and like, okay, I was like, is it gonna just be a parody of, you know, whiteout? And then you open up and whoa. It's Felipe Andrade, one of my favorite artists.
I knew you'd be excited.
I got very excited. I actually read a couple pages and I was like, okay, well, this is a different artist. And I was like, is this Eric Canetti? And then I was like, wait a minute. And I flipped back to the front. And yeah, and it was Felipe and one of my favorite artists, Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. And he did a John Carter, Princess of Mars thing for Marvel a while back. Anyways, this is super gorgeous, and it's just simple and smart that we have this sort of Hoth kind of world, and Rocket and Groot get into a scrape. Groot loses an arm, and because of the creature that they were fighting with, it's keeping him from growing his arm back, so he's not able to regenerate as he so easily does in every other situation.
Yeah.
So Rocket's got to go out and find, like, it's sort of like a fairy tale. Like, he's got to go out and find the ingredients to help Groot, who is basically mortally wounded.
It's the broadcast energy transmitter.
Yeah.
Those three things. You put them in.
No, those three things.
It's not, but I did it again. What do you want? Yeah, but I liked how, like, Rocket was just like, no, it's fine. Like, he's in denial for a while, and then the second that he wasn't, he's like, all right, let's go fix it. And, you know, there's something I like about that character. And I'm not going to tell you that Bradley Cooper has not somewhat shaped my, you know, how I read him. And I think that Scotty's totally locked into that characterization, which is interesting because he started this before that movie was out. So it's really cool that it's this consistent. It was fun, and it was a little touching, and it was a little sad. But I think simple, you nailed it in the best way.
And I loved the narration that Scotty wrote in. Like, they go back to this citadel or whatever, the castle where the ice ninjas live, and for whatever reason they don't freeze.
Yeah,
like, you don't have to explain it away. Just kind of, it's kind of irreverent, and I really like that especially for this character.
Yep.
And I think it's even more touching because it is Rocket, who's somebody who doesn't easily show his feelings.
Yeah.
You know, he tries to be the tough raccoon,
and then next issue they fight Smaug.
Exactly. There's a big dragon on the way, and that's another thing. It's cool that there's a nice little cliffhanger here because we've had a couple of sort of standalone issues, and those are really fun. Mm-hmm. And one of those was your pick of the week, right?
Yep.
Where everything was I Am Groot. And now we get another bit of a longer story, and I dig on this, and I think a great choice of artist for this particular story.
Yep, definitely. Too. Really nice coloring on it too.
Mm-hmm. Really good.
Yeah. So there we go. I bet that there is a Rocket Raccoon trade out there, and I bet that if you didn't read it, you're blowing it, and you should go get it. And if you do that, you should go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and you should order it there, because if you use that link to Amazon, a little bit of your purchase price goes back to operations fund here at iFanboy, and that is a super easy way for you to do that. So if you're going to buy books, and I think people listening to this will buy books,
I think so.
I don't know. I buy books. I don't read them. I buy them.
Maybe this podcast is their way of not reading books.
I have heard that, actually, now that you're saying it. Yeah. But that would be a super easy and helpful way to help out ifanboy.com if you appreciate the shows that we do for you. It's ifanboy.com/Amazon if you want to be a little more direct about what you're doing and you want to say, you know what? Take my money for your trucks. Sorry. Bandwidth. Take my money for your bandwidth. You can go to ifanboy.com/registration. I wouldn't even know where to buy drugs. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, I know a guy, but even I'd be embarrassed to ask him because it's like a thing. Anyway, ifanboy.com/registration. You can contribute directly via PayPal, $3 a month or $30 a year. You can use a credit card or you can use your PayPal account. Up to you. It's January, which means that several people have renewed recently, and I just want to specifically thank the people who are our ongoing contributors. Like we don't like to talk about it too much, but it's super helpful and it makes this easier, so it's not a hardship for us at all to sort of do and fit in between our lives and everything. And you make that possible, and you're the ones who are definitely keeping us motivated to keep the show good and carry along.
That's super nice of them to do that.
It is.
We appreciate those people.
I thought you were telling me it was super nice to say thank you.
No, it's nice of you to say thank you as well. You recognize. It's very thoughtful.
Yes.
So The Wicked and the Divine continues on with some awesome hair. And I just wanted to mention this one because they have this great idea of a fantheon, which is a convention about the pantheon. So if you haven't been reading Wicked and the Divine, it's about these sort of avatars, rock star sort of versions of the gods from various different, not just like the Greek pantheon, but all over and different religions. And this whole series is sort of a meditation on fandom and like going from being a fan to being a creator, that kind of stuff. And so I was very excited to see their take on a convention because obviously those guys have been to conventions and how are they going to portray it? And, you know, if you're expecting them to sort of like make fun of fans, that doesn't really happen.
No, but there is like a thing where like she keeps getting – like by the end she doesn't want to sign any more autographs. She's getting
annoyed.
And then there's another really interesting visual in this in that the fan, like the only characters who are drawn in color and in detail are the characters.
It's yes.
The gods for the most part, where the fans are all just sort of brown lumps.
Yeah, there's like these gray amorphous things, and that's kind of interesting. So
it's really interesting. If you think about, you know, these are creators who have been to lots of shows and things like that. And that, I mean, it's understandable that that's how you might see the crowds. Especially
yeah.
if you're constantly being approached and asked for a piece of yourself, you know.
Yeah, the moment that really struck me was when the one journalist character we've seen sort of emerges from the crowd and goes from being a gray amorphous blob into being that recognizable character. So that our main character, who has basically attained godlike powers from Lucifer, is a little bit jaded at this point. So and I think that's part of the examination that they're doing is she started out as a really exuberant character who was a real fan and fawning over these gods and then became part of their world. And now the way she looks at the other people around her who are at this convention, it's just like she's one of the gods and everybody kind of blends in together. So I'm curious to see where that goes. And this character's journey. I think that's the interesting thing from going from the first volume to this second arc. I thought that was a really interesting way of doing that visually.
Yeah.
So that's still fun. Rain, which is R-E-Y-N, number one, sort of jumped out from the pack for me. It's written by Kel Simons, who is doing that Mercenary Sea book that we really enjoy.
I'm listening.
The World War II book, yeah. But this is fantasy, and what sort of took me by surprise is you always usually see white people on the front of fantasy. You look at The Lord of the Rings, it's all white dudes and white ladies, and unless they're like an orc or something. And there are three characters in the cover of Rain. One is like a lizard person, but the other two are people of color, which is kind of interesting. And this is just, it's a straight up fantasy, and we've got a guy who's who's basically like a protector. There's this idea of like a Jedi kind of paladin. He doesn't necessarily have magical powers. The female character in this is a healer, and she seems to have Jedi-like powers. She's able to deflect like arrows and stuff. But he's part of like this noble band of warriors, of wardens who protect the land and haven't been around for a really long time. So there is that sort of Star Wars hero's journey kind of vibe to it. But what's kind of interesting is he'll take out a monster spider thing, and then he has to bow down and pray, but he's very casual about it. And so he's constantly talking to the goddess or whatever, who is like his patron or whatever, and to other people around in the village, that looks really weird. It looks like a guy who's just talking to himself.
Like so the Irish guy in Braveheart.
Yes. So he's like this, you know, this great warrior and everything, and very revered by the people who know what he is and where he's coming from. But to a lot of people, he's just a person. He's like Reverend Jim. So like what's going on with this guy? And it's got some creepy lizard people, and it's just kind of fun. And as a fan of Mercenary Sea, I think it's cool that it's not another war story. You know, it's a totally different genre, and I want to see where these guys take it.
And that book is like on a bit of a hiatus, kind of
a
thing.
Bit of a hiatus, but yeah. So in the meantime, this is a lot of fun, and if you like fantasy. And it's not just the same old like Tolkien kind of archetypes. I think this is very entertaining.
Cool. And so you are still reading Moon Knight?
I jumped in because it's a light week.
Okay, fair enough.
So I didn't read the issues that I'd missed.
Okay.
I just jumped in on this one looking for something to talk about to fill out the show. And luckily, it was a pretty interesting book, especially from just a visual standpoint. So Moon Knight has been captured and is in some kind of cell, and he doesn't know where he is. He just woke up there, and they've been doing experiments on him, and there are other prisoners there, and they're like walking around in circles, and all of the guards are wearing like Casey Jones kind of like hockey masks. And it reminded me of that.
I was so mad they cast that guy in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was not how I heard Casey Jones in my head at all.
No.
I just went way back there. But Elias Koteas.
Elias Koteas, yeah, yeah.
But now when you say Casey Jones, I hear like his voice, and I'm still like, that's not what he sounded like.
What did he sound like to you?
I don't know. I don't think I pictured like a gruff New Yorker. Like, it makes sense. But then like, I don't know.
That's what he is.
I know. I pictured somebody younger. But also, I was a kid when I first read him. So like, when you're a kid, you know, things that are
different. Did you sound like you?
Probably.
Was he supposed to sound like Josh at 11 or something?
No, what one of those. Josh at 11 sounded exactly like Josh 22 sounded. So, you know.
It reminded me, there's that movie, and I forget what it's called, but it's Stallone and Schwarzenegger end up in a prison together, and it's like the Unescapable Prison. It came out like a year or two ago or something. And the whole time, they're trying to figure out where the hell they are.
Listen, if you wanted me to talk about a movie and a character actor from the early 90s, I can do that. If you want to talk about an action movie that came out a year ago, I don't know what you're talking about.
I had a Netflix disc to use up, and it had just come. Anyways, so he's trying to figure out where he is. And I like the point, he's like, he's feeling the walls, he's feeling the floors, and it's in like a few days have passed. And then that weird like bird skull thing is talking to him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, the floor's cold. And he's like, is that, you've been here for like a week and like that's all you came up with? The floor's cold? You're supposed to be like this great detective. Ends up there in a plane. And but on a visual standpoint, it's really interesting use of the grids. And I think they're looking at that first arc and be like, okay, we've really got to try to do something interesting here and make this special. And the soft colors being used, because it's still Jordi Belair, I believe, doing the colors. And that's sort of the only vestige of the first arc, aside from that like Moon Knight bird thing. But just in terms of the visual look, the colors are really interesting. I don't know if I'd sort of stick with this. I don't think I have that attachment to the character.
I have no attachment to the character.
But I at least like the ambition to understand that, okay, that first arc was really special. We really got to up our game here. And it is a nice-looking book.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's one of those things where, like, even if I do, you know, like some of the presentation, the character really, like, it's not a character that I have an attachment to.
The last book we have on our list right now is The Kitchen Number 3. And I'm noticing that there's a through line here is that I know most of the colorists on all these books just by looking at them. This is another Judy Belair book, and she did Autumn Lands, and then you got Dave Stewart on Rumble, and you got Jean-Francois Bellieu on Rocket Raccoon.
Rocket Raccoon,
like
right.
Matthew Wilson on Wicked and the Divine. I feel like we're getting somewhere, is what I'm saying. I think it's good for colorists that's a thing. And
do you mean getting somewhere as a people, or do you mean like getting somewhere from the beginning of the show where you're like, and there's some other names on the front of the book? I don't know who they are.
To be honest, that was a DC book and had three anchors. they put the credits like at the very end.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I could just flip it and act like, oh right, Jonathan Glapion on inks. Mm-hmm. But he did, you know, some of the pages, apparently. But I wasn't reading. I didn't read the pick. That's the pick of the week too. I didn't read it and go, oh, this inking is inconsistent. I never noticed that though, really. Anyway, the point being, The Kitchen Number 3. This is the 70s gangster movie as a Vertigo book that the men have been put away, so the ladies have taken over the racket in Hell's Kitchen. Hence the kitchen. I'm still reading it, but. It's I think, what do we call it? It was like a little
on the nose. Like it's,
yeah, it's on the nose. It's a little JV. It feels a little junior varsity.
It's a really cool idea, but it's like, it's you read so many things and it's like, oh, I've seen that in, you know, in Goodfellas or something.
It hasn't given me either the note of authenticity that I want. I think earlier when we first started, it was like what you would write if you'd only seen crime shows on TV.
Right.
That's kind of what it feels like. Okay. But I want to like it, and I want to keep going, and because I like all of the things about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not quite delivering as much as I want. But it's interesting enough. Anyway, the point that I want to bring up here is that I got angry at it because at the end of the book, there's a revelation and a thing happens, and it's kind of interesting. And then the girl gets on the phone and she calls the other girl in the bar, and is like, "Yeah, he talked to us about," says the name. And, you know, do they know that we did it? And I was just like, why are you on the phone?
Right.
Like, and I, like, if they're trying to say that they're not experienced or they're stupid or what, like, it's in Goodfellas. You don't talk on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Polly doesn't talk on the phone. He gets got because the girl was on the phone. Like, I don't want to see a character make that mistake because I've already seen it. That is how Henry Hill gets caught in Goodfellas. That's his downfall, is that the girl talked on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have that be your thing, and if that's not going to be your thing, then it's stupid for you to do it.
Yeah,
and I feel like we are really used to now. Characters all get to call each other on cell phones, so if you ever need two characters to talk to each other, you have no excuse to put them together.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if this is that. I shouldn't use the phone. And this is totally like a gangster specific thing. I was like, get off the phone! Like, it made me mad. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I felt the same way about that beat. And then earlier, when she's saying, you know, don't you have a place like in Goodfellas? And like, it's already drawing enough attention to itself of like, you know, sort of the interest that it's wearing on its sleeve, mm-hmm. like all of its influences. And then to mention Goodfellas. Mm-hmm. And then after that, or not Goodfellas, excuse me, Godfather. I'm sorry. Yeah. After mentioning the Godfather, she goes and makes that mistake.
Yeah.
Like, if you're aware enough to be watching mob movies.
And I think, I'm pretty sure that Don Corleone had a line somewhere about not talking on the phone.
Right.
So, you know, and it's interesting because one of the things I've always really loved about The Sopranos is that those guys were constantly talking about it, but that worked in a completely different way, in a postmodern sort of way, that this, mm-hmm. this doesn't work. Also, it's brilliant, so that helps. If it's brilliant, you get away with a lot of stuff. I'm still reading it. I don't want to. I keep reading it. I want it to work, so I'm sticking with it. I want a Vertigo book to work. I want a book that has ladies working on it about and the whole thing. But it bugged me.
This doesn't necessarily bug me, but I sort of like that whenever anything bad happens, they immediately reach for their guns and like they have their guns out in like the middle of the street.
Yep. Yeah, they're not. They don't seem to be good. They seems like they should be going to jail or be killed soon.
And not even like little guns, like big,
huge hand cannons.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not how wise guys do it.
This is like any sign of provocation. The gun is out of the purse. Let's go.
I wonder if that's a... Anyway. I wonder if that's symbolism. Anyway, so that's the books from the week. Let's move along. We ended up getting a lot of time out of those books. So let's move on to listener questions and see what we can get through from these. Brian writes in and says, this question is mainly for Paul, although I'd still love to hear what Connor and Josh think about it. Are you looking forward to CM Punk's writing debut in comics, Thor Annual? What are your general thoughts on his entering the world of comics, especially since there's a lot of creative hardships in the industry that he just left?
I am excited. I am a fan of CM Punk. He's a really great showman, and one of the reasons I like CM Punk isn't just about his athletic ability, but because of his presentation. He is known for the pipe bomb, where he grabs the mic and is able to say sort of whatever he wants and breaks the fourth wall a little bit. I think would be a great actor. Now, is he going to be a great writer? That remains to be seen, but he's going to be writing a Thor story, and, you know, so that's two things I'm a fan of. So, you know, I'm excited to see what he does.
Have you ever read anything he's written?
Have I read anything that he's written?
Has he written anything?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
But, I mean, he does, like, his own sort of writing for his, like, his character, mm-hmm. like,
yeah, okay. I
the character that he would play. He came up with some pretty interesting storylines, and from what I understand, they kind of, for a while at least, let him do what he wanted to do.
That really is the only the very barest need for a person who's a comic book writer, though.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to draw from anything, help. Yeah, and he is going to have help, but he's an interesting persona, and be interesting, like, you know, how is he going to write, you know, action? Are we going to, you know, see, you know, a more thoughtful take on, or is he going to go a completely different direction and do, and I know he is a comic book fan. So
yeah, no, and I've heard that, and I don't know much about him other than people that I know seem to really like him a lot, both as
now,
a personality and an entertainer.
Interesting throwback here. I think he would be a great Casey Jones. Like if they did were to do like a live action Turtles movie.
Yeah. Yeah, but they haven't.
Not as if they haven't.
They haven't, though, since the 90s, right?
Since the 90s, right. So, but he would be a great Casey Jones.
Well, there you go. So there's a little something for you, Brian. Adam from Indiana writes in and says, hi, guys. I recently commenced my annual rereading of the unabridged Oxford English Dictionary and ran across the word ennui. I find it a fascinating concept. I wonder if one of you would care to share a personal experience with the sentiment. Since this is a comic book podcast, perhaps you could relate it to some noteworthy comic book character. He's really given us carte blanche there if we're going to just keep using twee French terms.
Okay, so let's look up exactly what ennui means. I know what it means, but I want to
I thought it was the French pronunciation of the name Henry with a slight speech impediment.
A feeling of listlessness and dissatisfaction arising from a lack of occupation or excitement.
Boredom.
Yeah.
It's a more existential version of boredom is how I always think of it. Just
very well put, yeah. So I think of Ziggy. I think of ennui. So like I think of Ziggy and I think of I think Lil Depressed Boy, there's a little bit more ennui than depression going on there.
So you're thinking of it in terms of what the work is projecting, as opposed to your feeling about comics or something.
Oh, okay. I was just I was just trying to find an embodiment of ennui, and so
you know what? Okay, if I had to do it your way, I would say death from the Infinity Gauntlet.
There you go. That's a good
she
one.
She just wants nothing to do with whatever it is Thanos is destroying. She's like, eh. It's fine.
So it's sort of like apathy, but
yeah. But also, like, I've seen it. I've done. I'm death. What do you know? Come on. What do you mm-hmm. hear? As a reader, I think, especially what we are is intense readers. Like, we're constantly inputting, and there's patterns and things like that. I definitely get that sense of it. And I find it to be very cyclical. Like there was a while. You know, there's been times where I'm like, I don't want to read any more superheroes right now. But then at the same time, like, it comes and goes, because this week my pick of the week was a really straightforward, punchy Superman and Batman story, which is sort of straight as you can get. So, like, you know, I go back to appreciating it because I think that the industry sort of focuses on different things. And as they do that, you either get t- tired of things, or you know, or what's old becomes new, I guess. But I definitely feel that, you know, like we all had Zombie on Wii, you know, for a little while, or you know, whatever the you know, the lady villain characters, you know, like that was like, okay, it's it doesn't have any. So I think that that's a part of being a longtime comic book reader. For some, for others, they want that all the time, and they never get bored of the thing. They don't want anything else. Whereas I don't have that at the opposite, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you could think of it as like a burnout kind of thing. Like, it's just, this isn't working anymore, you know, or it could...
Green Lantern.
Okay.
Green Lantern had this great concept with Darkest Night, you know, and there were these colors, and it was a whole thing, and it just got... Like, I just, there was totally a sense of ennui with that, you know, as a concept. And they just did it for another 7 years or whatever. Like, they just kept going. I don't think it was that long, but it felt it, you know. I don't know. I'm probably getting away from the meaning of that word.
Just as a visual, I think of, the Spider-Man No More kind of thing of, you know, the Spider-Man costume in the dumpster and walking away.
Yeah.
And just kind of down about it. And a lot of times it isn't just like tragedy, like, oh no, I can't, like the character isn't just like, I can't, I'm a danger to everyone. It's like, it's a thing where, you know, Spider-Man and I think Superman especially are characters where it's like, nobody's with me, you know, no matter what I do. Charlie Brown as well. This character very much where like the world's kind of against me, and no matter what I try, it's just not working out and everybody's having fun. Like that little, you know, Charlie Brown Christmas tree. That's ennui.
All right, I think we nailed that, dude.
That's a fun question.
It was
interesting to explore.
I was very happy about it. I have one more email. And
okay,
we need to discuss it. I'm just want to. These came in. These
okay.
are separate emails. There's no question. Jason says, "I haven't understood any of Jonathan Hickman's Avengers, and I have no idea what Marvel announced today." Thank you, Jonathan. Jason, like that's I understand you. It sounds like you got a little bit on you ennui with that.
Yeah.
And then he also wrote it again.
Around.
He wrote it again. I like when y'all talk about the broadcast energy transmitter, yo Joe. So earlier in the show, that was for you, Jason. Just go ahead and put that out. Marvel.
Totally organic.
You know what? Marvel made an announcement that there's going to be big changes, but there won't be.
There will. There'll be changes.
It's change. Comic books are.
It's whether they'll stick is the thing.
Comic books are the status quo with the illusion of change. That's what mainstream superhero comics are, and everybody needs to remember that all the time.
Let me ask you this, okay? Uh-huh. So they're going to do the Secret Wars thing, and it's all about like let's take all of these alternate realities and push them together and have them fight, and it's sort of the bigger event version of what we were talking about with all new X-Men. Mm-hmm. Are there any like alternates or what if kind of versions of characters that you would like to see again? Would you like to see a return to like House of M or like Age of Apocalypse, things like that? The thing is, I don't like there's a couple of things that I'm sure have been on the shelf for a while, but we see a return to stuff like
this is lame, but I'd like to have my Steve Rogers Captain America back, and I'd like to have because everything I want to say is like put it back the way it was. And I know that that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and honestly, that's my thought. Like, my other thought was like, well, Iron Man has gotten kind of stupid.
You don't like the idea of Falcon being Captain America.
I actually don't mind it. I'll read it as a story, and I'm fine with it. But, you know, I like Steve Rogers as Captain America. But I also don't mind, like, exploring him in a sweater vest. in like, a crouch. I'm cool with that for a little bit. I don't know. I don't tend to think of Marvel as like as alternate versions of whatever. I really like Miles Morales and
yeah.
I've been way more into reading that than Peter Parker. So actually I would be fine with that. I liked Ultimate Peter Parker quite a bit. And he's out there somewhere. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Although maybe that was like a way to like end his story. Like he went out and he found his, you know, he found his groove and that's what he doesn't want to be Spider-Man and that's fine. And that'll be
Yeah, I mean I agree in that I think it's with Marvel, I don't necessarily have favorite alternate realities. It's that's much easier with DC.
Yeah, because they have other Earths, and so
they have other Earths. But with like Marvel, it's been more informal.
Yeah,
you know, and so it's the line is a little bit subtler. So, I mean, I don't know. I just I'd like.
There were a lot.
I prefer the previous Guardians of the Galaxy to the current.
Oh sure,
incarnation, but that's not a.
All that you and I are just saying is like, I wish you did it like this again instead of yeah. doing it now, which I don't think is what was what that question has in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be a way to revert some of it to, you know, it was nice to try things, but maybe that didn't work. Let's go back to ground, and that's fine, mm-hmm. or maybe not. Maybe change things. I don't really care. I at this point, like, I'm not connected to it enough. Like, it would be fun to have old style Hawkeye, but I don't mind the new one. You know, like I don't mind what's going on with him there. Although that seems to be pretty much over.
Yeah, if I'm trying to come up with an answer to that, it's I'd have to be reaching for something. I'd
first instinct
pretty
was,
easy going about it.
My first instinct was like the Thor, the kid in the future story who got Thor's hammer. But that's because when I was 11, I thought that he looked cool as shit. And I don't really remember much about it other than I ordered the issue from American Comics and had it delivered to my house, and I sent in a form because there was no internet.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent it to me, and I have that in a box, and then I haven't read it since then. But there it is. So if you want to write in, that was fun. Thank you for everyone who wrote in. You can email us at contact@fanboy, or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and you know, keep it cool. Don't go on too long or anything. Now, listen, related to that, and this is super important, if you want us to do a Valentine's Day show with relationship questions as in previous years, you need to send them in. We need more of them, and if we don't get enough good ones, then we're just going to bag the segment. So don't make stuff up. Give us something, but write in. What's the
yeah,
worst
and here's
happen?
The thing. Like, it. Don't worry about like being funny or anything like don't. That. Just...
We are the ones who need to worry about that. And obviously, we're not afraid to miss.
Yeah, just, you know, if you have a question, just, you know, be honest about it, write it. We don't have to include your whole name or anything like that, whatever. But you know, we want questions to come in. So whatever you're thinking, ask.
Yeah, definitely. So again, write in contact@iFanboy or call in 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. Let's make that was a really fun show last year. People really liked it, but obviously we need your help with that. So make sure you write in. Don't just wait for other people to do that.
Yeah.
So that being said, go over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on the show, talk about the books from the last week. You can talk about, you know, anything you want in that thread, really, unless it's horrible, and then we'll just take it out. But, you know, I guess take your shot. And you can find all of our podcast show, even all of the old content that was there, all of the Mindcarp, that kind of thing. Again,
that's going back.
Yeah, I know, it's going way back, but it's there is what I'm saying. There is a treasure trove at ifanboy.com. You can follow ifanboy at twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy. Those are the places where we're going to post what the pick of the week is before this show comes out, so that you'll know and you can be there. And of course, you can follow us at CL Kilpatrick, at Fuzzy Typewriter, and at J.A. Flanagan.
And finally, if you dig this sort of thing, write a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about the show. What's one I haven't done yet? Maybe, no, don't do that. Put it as an answer in one of those cootie catchers that you made in grade school. I don't know. Tell people about iFanboy.
Just do it. You know, I'm
just
sick,
say you
I'm
dig it. You'll probably like it too.
Find a way.
You'll find a way.
Do it. You know what? We believe in you.
We do. Sidewalk chalk.
There it is.
Make it happen. I like the choice of sidewalk chalk because it's not permanent. You know, we're not telling you to like graffiti it on walls and
it's
stuff.
Colorful, though. It's
but
nice.
People will notice.
They will. They can't not.
You don't usually see, you know, a URL in sidewalk chalk.
Yeah, and listen, this is a craft thing. You can do what you want, but I would go ahead and leave off the http://, because I don't think it's necessary. In fact, yeah. You could probably leave off the W's.
Yeah.
Know, that's a little wacky, but at least you're saving chalk. So that is all for this week's show. Thank you so much. Connor will be back next week. And all will be well.
Then until then, I'm Paul.
and I'm Josh.
Woo-ha!
Get you all in here. Just past the Cisco. Yo, take a trip down to Mexico. Come back with that shit that might make you psycho. Maximum frequency studio stereo. Sorry, this is it, but homeboy, I got to go. I got step up in the place and you watch them correct. Got you all in.